Hello, this is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Friday, August 19th. We'll begin with a front page article titled Rauner Signs Gabby's Law. Urbana. The night his 5-year-old daughter died, Tony Galbo said to anyone who would listen, "No parent should ever have to do this. There should be Gabby's Law." 4 years later, at Presence Covenant Medical Center in Urbana, on Thursday, Governor Bruce Rauner signed into law Gabby's Law, with Tony and Elizabeth Galbo of Monticello standing nearby. "We didn't want another family to go through what we went through," Tony Galbo said. "The state of Illinois needs to take care of its citizens, and today, with this law, it's doing that." On May 10, 2012, Gabby Galbo died from sepsis, the body's life-threatening response to an infection that can lead to tissue damage, organ failure, and death. Gabby developed sepsis from undiagnosed Rocky Mountain spotted fever. 5 days earlier, Gabby was released from Carl Foundation Hospital, despite blood work that was later revealed to show she had significant signs of infection. The Galbos were told the night Gabby was released that the blood work was unremarkable. Gabby's Law, Senate Bill 2403, requires hospitals to adopt evidence-based protocols for the early recognition and treatment of patients with sepsis, severe sepsis, or septic shock that are based on generally accepted standards of care. It requires the protocols contain certain components, including those specific to identifying and treating adults and children. The bill, championed by State Senator Chapin Rose, Muhammad, passed unanimously in the State House and Senate. "This bill is an example of good public policy that will save lives," Rauner said. "But we are saddened because it was due to the loss of a 5-year-old Gabby Galbo that this legislation was sent to my desk. Gabby's Law will save lives while honoring this little girl's legacy. It will have a tremendous impact in Illinois for years to come." Elizabeth Galbo was emotional, sobbing as she held her daughter Jada. "When we first went to Representative Bill Mitchell and Senator Chapin Rose, I wasn't sure how it was going to go or how far it was going to go," Elizabeth Galbo said. "But Senator Rose took his time. He told us, if we're going to do this, let's do it right." When Carl Foundation Hospital in Champaign treated Gabby in 2012, it had a sepsis protocol, but not a pediatric sepsis protocol. "Every hospital needs to mandate this protocol," Tony Galbo said. "There are hospitals that have been doing this protocol for many years, but this is for the hospitals that have not." Sepsis kills more than 258,000 people in the United States each year, making it the 9th leading cause of disease-related deaths, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It accounts for more deaths each year than prostate cancer, breast cancer, and AIDS combined. There are over 1.6 million cases of sepsis per year in the United States, and over half of Americans don't know the early warning symptoms, said Kathy Johnson, an operations director and telehealth team member for the Presence Health System. "We must raise awareness of it." Early warning symptoms include fever, shivering, extreme pain, discolored skin, extreme sleepiness, confusion, and shortness of breath. Anyone with two or more of those symptoms should see a doctor. If sepsis is detected early, it can be treated. "If your health care provider doesn't screen you for sepsis, tell them you want them to," Johnson said. Madigan decries governor's extreme agenda at Democrat Day. Springfield. A day after Republicans largely avoided mentioning their party's presidential candidate during Governor's Day at the Illinois State Fair, Democrats on Thursday lauded candidate Hillary Clinton and sought to tie Governor Bruce Rauner and the rest of the Illinois GOP to Donald Trump. Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan of Chicago, who also chairs the state Democratic Party, vowed during a breakfast meeting of party leaders ahead of Democrat Day at the fair that the party and its labor union allies will continue to stand up to the extreme agenda of Rauner and Trump ahead of November's election. Rauner in particular leads an effort to reverse a trend in American government that has held steady since the start of Franklin Roosevelt's presidency, Madigan said. "For 83 years, the American national government and state governments, including Illinois, have always worked to raise wage levels and the standard of living and to protect the vulnerable in our society," he said. "That's been the policy of American governments for 83 years. However, today in Illinois, Governor Rauner is attempting to advance an extreme agenda that would actually take the state of Illinois in the opposite direction. At the breakfast and an afternoon rally at the fairgrounds, Madigan and fellow Democrats touted their efforts to block Rauner's turnaround agenda, which they say would hurt working and middle-class families. They also blame the governor for spending most of his first term so far holding the state's budget and residents in need of state services hostage in an attempt to force his ideas through the General Assembly. Those ideas include business-friendly changes to workers' compensation laws and diminished collective bargaining rights, which he says would make Illinois more attractive to employers and help spur economic growth. Rauner said Wednesday that Republicans will use the unprecedented campaign cash that he and his wealthy allies have brought to the party to launch the biggest ground game that's ever been done for legislative races in state history. But Democrats say they'll use their network of union members and ordinary, everyday Illinoisans to counter the millions of dollars Rauner and his allies are pumping into the election. "I think Democrats know a little bit more about the ground game," Illinois AFL-CIO President Michael Kerrigan of Decatur said at the breakfast meeting, which dwarfed a similar GOP event held Wednesday morning. "It's in this room. You live in Illinois. You've raised your family in Illinois. It's your community. You know how to get out and work for your candidates." Chicago City Clerk Susana Mendoza, who's challenging incumbent Republican Comptroller Leslie Munger, urged her fellow Democrats to go to the polls November 8th and to make phone calls and knock on doors to convince others to do the same. "I need you to do it, not just for me, but for every single Democrat on the Democratic ticket this year, from the top to the very bottom," she said, specifically mentioning State Representatives Brandon Phelps of Harrisburg and Mike Smitty of Hillsdale and State Senator Gary Forby of Benton, all top targets in the GOP's effort to cut into the Democratic supermajorities in the General Assembly. Republicans have been airing TV commercials all summer, labeling those lawmakers and others minions of Madigan, whom they blame for the state's many fiscal woes. Madigan said he's not surprised by the tactic, which has been tried unsuccessfully many times in the past, although without nearly as much money behind the message. "They're doing that because they don't want to talk about themselves," he said. "They don't want to talk about the record of the Republican Party nationally, the record of the Republican Party here in Illinois, because they know the National Republican Party under Trump and the Illinois Republican Party under Rauner is a Republican Party of extremism, and Illinoisans are prepared to reject extremism." While Democrats were eager to talk up their 2016 candidates up and down the ballot, they weren't so willing to discuss who might step up to challenge Rauner for the governor's office in 2018. Several people who've been mentioned as potential candidates, including U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, former Governor Pat Quinn, and City Treasurer of Chicago Kurt Summers, waved off questions about possible gubernatorial bids and said they're focused on their current jobs and helping fellow Democrats win in November. One candidate who received a strong showing of support from her party in the November race was U.S. Representative Tammy Duckworth of Hoffman Estates, who spoke at the breakfast and is challenging U.S. Senator Mark Kirk in one of the most widely and closely watched U.S. Senate contests nationwide. Chamber honors Citizen of the Year, Janelle Norman, others, Decatur. Over the years, Janelle Norman has been actively involved in efforts to improve the Decatur community. One of her most recent focuses has been to improve communication between community members and the Decatur Police Department. She took a leading part last summer in forming the Area Leaders and Education Response Team, known as ALERT, which was put to the test in July during a high-profile incident when a man was shot by a Decatur police officer. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf recognized Norman as the Citizen of the Year on Thursday during the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce Awards luncheon, in large part because the group was credited with keeping the situation from escalating like what has happened in other parts of the country. "It is because of that partnership Decatur was mentioned as a model response for how these incidents should be handled," Moore Wolf said. "The relationship was tested in the early morning hours of Monday, July 11th, but the group was able to ensure calm." Norman, who is president of the Decatur branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, said she was humbled by the recognition in receiving the award. She credited Decatur Police Chief Jim Getz and the officers of the department for their willingness to work with the group. Getz joined Moore Wolfe on the stage inside Heartland Community Church's Grand Palace Banquet Facility to present the award to Norman, along with officers John Jones and Lauren Sturdivant. Despite the shooting occurring in the early morning hours, Getz said Norman answered his call right away and put the response plan into action. Getz said Norman has always been genuine in his interactions with her. Norman was standing by Getz's side a few hours later during a news conference announcing the first details of the case, helping to ensure information was released in a timely, responsible manner. She was there again at an afternoon news conference. "If you don't put accurate information out, people will go ahead and make up the story anyway," Getz said. "I couldn't be more proud of the citizens in Decatur and how they handled the situation to be patient so we could get the truth out there." The state police investigation into the shooting of the 40-year-old Lonnie D. Mitchell II was completed earlier this week. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott will review the case. Mitchell, who was allegedly armed with a knife and a BB gun that looked like a semi-automatic handgun, is recovering from his wound suffered when Officer Andrew Whitmer shot him. Whitmer remains on administrative leave. Norman said Decatur's ability to remain calm following the shooting highlights what kind of community it has become. "Decatur is generous in giving, making life a little easier for those less fortunate," Norman said. "If we work together, we can ensure inclusion, equality, and justice." Other award recipients are part of efforts to create more opportunities for young people in the community. The Boys and Girls Club of Decatur was selected as the nonprofit of the year. "Decatur has some of the most phenomenal children as any community has," said Bruce Jeffrey, the club's executive director. "The club is a second home for many of them. They can come and feel safe. Most importantly, they can reach a level of success." Jeffrey said anyone visiting the club can meet some amazing young people. Chamber President Marinda Rothrock said all of the nominees and award recipients are well-deserving of recognition for their contributions to the community with quality service and by promoting economic growth. "It takes an extreme amount of character and tenacity to be a leader and run a business," Rothrock said. "We want to celebrate the contributions of our members." Rothrock said the Chamber's Small Business Executive Council selected the recipients of awards in 7 categories from which nominations were received. She said each of the nominees were asked to answer why they would be deserving of the award for which they were nominated. The winners were Lockhart's Barber College for Micro Business of the Year, Brinketer and Associates for Small Business of the Year, Lockhart's Barbershop for Business Expansion, Viewig Real Estate for Outstanding Development, Decatur Magazine publisher Beth Stringer as Entrepreneur of the Year, and Investment Planners Incorporated CEO President David Kuczynski with the Leadership Masters Award. Awards for 2 additional categories did not require nominations. Jason Doyle of Tate & Lyle was picked as Decatur Leadership Institute Alumnus of the Year, and Hank Norris of Viewig Real Estate was named Chamber Ambassador of the Year. Learning how to recognize Alzheimer's. Decatur. Jacqueline Rawlings has been seeing symptoms of Alzheimer's in her mother for years, but has struggled to find a doctor who will address it. "We had a lot of inconclusive diagnoses. We had to finally change doctors," Rawlings said. "It's better with her new doctor. He's been more helpful, but I feel like there are a big lack of resources in the area." Rawlings said she gained a better understanding of what her mom is going through at Wednesday's Alzheimer's Association Know the 10 Signs event at Decatur Memorial Hospital. "My mom is pegging every one of those warning signs," Rawlings said. "It helps me confirm what I've known for several years and what some doctors kind of dismiss. I'm kind of a nerd, and I just try to learn all I can about it to help her live the best she can." Sarah McGady, the association's Springfield Area Manager of Education Outreach, went through all 10 signs for early detection of Alzheimer's, pointing out the significance of each sign and also dispelling some myths about the disease. "Common misconceptions about Alzheimer's include that having a little touch of dementia is a typical part of aging, and the other extreme that any sign of memory loss means Alzheimer's. If you have one of the warning signs, it doesn't mean you definitely have Alzheimer's," McGrady said. "It means you should start a conversation with your doctor." McGrady said many suffering from the onset of Alzheimer's will deny it because they can still recall events from when they were younger. They'll say they can remember some event that happened 50 years ago in great detail, so they don't have Alzheimer's, even though they can't remember a conversation from 5 minutes ago, McGady said. McGady said a warning sign that's often overlooked and under-considered is withdrawal from work or social activity. That's the worst thing they can do. They need to stay social to help keep the skills they have, McGady said. A lot of times the answer is smaller groups and games that are easier to follow. Jason Rising, DMH Senior Behavioral Health Services Outreach Coordinator, said he's planning on holding regular educational meetings about Alzheimer's and dementia at the hospital. DMH Senior Services Liaison Mary Margaret Robinson said there were also 3 Alzheimer's Association support groups in Decatur. They're at Imboden, Greek Creek Gardens, the Macon County Health Department, and First Christian Church. They're very informal. Everyone just talks about their loved ones, and we have a kind of a roundtable discussion, Robinson said. I've been doing the one at First Christian Church for 9 years, and I haven't had to say too much to get people talking. Mattoon's Heritage Park nears completion downtown. Construction is nearing completion on the downtown Heritage Park, a project that is a partnership between the city and the Lumpkin Family Foundation. Passersby can see the sidewalks, wooden boardwalk, and stone landscaping that will shape this park at the southwest corner of Broadway Avenue and 17th Street. Plans call for the spaces between these structures to be filled with a covered performance area, a stream-like water feature, park benches and trees, prairie grass, and other plants. City Public Works Director Dean Barber said the park is on track to be available for use at the end of October, although some of the landscaping work will need to be completed in the spring. The 1.4-acre park has been made possible by Richard Lumpkin gifting this property to the city, and the Lumpkin Family Foundation providing an $800,000 grant for the design and construction. Executive Director Bruce Karmazin said Heritage Park fits well with the foundation's mission, which includes supporting long-lasting improvements in health. He said this new green space downtown will be a place where visitors can be active outdoors and take a relaxing break. Karmazin said the foundation did think long and hard about using this property for parkland instead of for a commercial building project or a new parking lot. He said they think this green space will offer economic benefits downtown. When there is green space in an area, people linger longer and spend money at the local shops, Karmazin said. Those involved with the project anticipate that people will be drawn to this green space by the amenities there and by special events that could be held under the covered performance space planned for the west end of the park. The Lumpkin Family Foundation's mission also includes supporting community access to the arts. Mattoon Tourism and Arts Director Angelia Burgett said the park could be incorporated into events such as the annual Artworks Festival downtown, host the Lunch and Music Series, and other live performances and more. Burgett said Heritage Park could be used in conjunction with events at the Mattoon Depot across the street to the north and Progress Square across the street to the east. Barbara said Heritage Park also will tie in with the foundation's mission of supporting long-lasting improvements in environmental sustainability. Barbara said the rain garden at the east end of the park will capture storm water and allow this water to naturally soak into the soil. Plans call for this garden to contain a variety of drought-resistant plants. Barbara said the rain garden will be an example of an alternative to rock-lined weedy detention ponds for storm water. In addition, Barber said the site's small parking lot will be lined with permeable brick pavers, through which storm water will filter into the ground, and the site's underground cistern will detain some of the storm water. He said this water will be used for a small, stream-like water feature at the park's east end. Karmazin said the exterior of the park is to be lined with display panels containing information about local history. Telephone scam. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott and Macon County Sheriff Thomas Schneider are warning of a new phone scam. The scam involves residents being called from a person claiming to be from the Internal Revenue Service for the U.S. Treasury Department. The caller claims money is owed and that they will have to either sue the resident or have them arrested without immediate payment. The calls are placed from outside the United States, but through a technique called spoofing. The numbers appear as though they are coming from within the country. Residents who receive the call are advised to hang up and to ignore any messages demanding a call back. If a scam is suspected, call the Elder Fraud Hotline at 217-615-7582. Three Macon County highways will be reduced to one lane from 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday to Thursday, August 23rd to 25th for bridge maintenance. Roads affected are County Highway 24, Reese Bridge Road, over Lake Decatur between County Highway 23, Sangamon Road, and Christmas Tree Road, August 23rd to 24th. County Highway 50 Extension, Long Bridge Road over Lake Decatur on August 24th. And County Highway 41, Wickles Road, between Cantrell and Rock Springs Road, plus County Highway 27, Lincoln Memorial Parkway. Between Lincoln Trail, Homestead State Park, and County Highway 28, Mount Auburn Blacktop, August 24th and 25th. Central Illinois Special Olympics will hold its annual bowling meet Saturday, August 20th at Spare Time Lanes. Opening ceremonies will begin at 8:30 a.m. with competition to follow. More than 200 athletes from Christian, Logan, Macon, and Moultrie counties will participate in the event. For more information, contact Joni Keyes at the Special Olympics office at 217-428-9255 or jkeyes at soill.org. Volunteers are being sought to come to Argenta Oriana Elementary School at 8 a.m. Saturday, August 20th and build a playground. Julie Camfield, President of Parents and Teachers Together, or PAT, said the work will continue until the job is done and that pulled pork sandwiches, kettle chips, and cookies will be served to the volunteers at lunchtime. PAT raised just under $37,000 of the cost, and the Phyllis Madeline Winnings Trust through the Gerber State Bank recently awarded a grant of $14,770. Decatur Christian, bound by faith, family, and school. According to the Ecclesiastes, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. When Decatur Christian schoolteachers arrived at Life Foursquare Church on Thursday for their annual two-day meeting before the first day of school, they received a tube of Aquafresh toothpaste with a three-strand cord tied around it. "Our focus is one of those strands being church, one being home, and the other being school," said Administrator Randy Grigg. "All of those strands need to work together if we're going to have the strongest product at the end. We want our kids to come out well, surrounded by the same message at church, at home, and at school." The cord was one visual reminder of those three strands, and the toothpaste is in three colors, making it a reminder as well, he said. Classes begin at Decatur Christian on August 22nd, and teachers meet together for the first 2 days of professional development, fellowship, and worship together to start the school year off on the right foot. Their featured speaker this year was Macon Piatt Special Education District Behavioral Specialist Lori Cruz, who began her talk with a photo of her family. "My family trumps everything," she said. "No matter what goes on at work or elsewhere," she said, "her family comes first, and she wanted the Decatur Christian teachers to know a little bit about her so they'd have a connection while she gave her talk." Another part of her story is that she couldn't read in third grade until she encountered a teacher who gave her the confidence and individual attention she needed. Eventually, she became a special education teacher with certifications in three areas, which is unusual, she said, and today is a behavioral specialist. Her message to the teachers of Decatur Christian: all children can learn, but maybe not on the same day and not in the same way. "Every year when we do this, it's always encouraging and recharges me as an educator that what I'm doing is valuable," said Ginger Arteem, who will teach advanced math to juniors and seniors in high school this year. "We leave our fingerprints on the lives of young people." The meetings remind her that each child has worth and value as a creation of God, she said, and each has a contribution to make. The small classes make it possible to give each student individual attention, and she's thankful for that. "I can tailor my instruction to each child's needs," our team said. "That doesn't mean I lower my standards, but I can speak to each child differently. The goal is to motivate students to take responsibility and to know how to thrive. That's our goal, to teach them how to thrive, not just make it thrive." Evacuated residents in limbo as wildfire burns in California. San Bernardino, California. Twisted metal gates and rusted mailboxes remained where houses once stood, Flames had turned a lot full of cars, including some vintage models, into a junkyard of hollowed-out shells. Countless trees were scorched or gone. Scenes of destruction were everywhere. Thursday, after a huge wildfire spread through mountains and high desert 60 miles east of Los Angeles so swiftly that it took seasoned firefighters off guard. But the day also brought the biggest gains yet against the blaze, which, with containment jumping from 22% up from just 4% when the day began. The fire has burned 56 square miles. An aerial flyover revealed significant property loss, but crews were just beginning to comb through the rubble to document the devastation. Most of the areas where there was structural damage, they're still smoldering, U.S. Forest Service spokesman Jake Rodriguez said. Many residents remained in limbo, unable to go home and wondering whether anything would be left when they can. I want it to be over, but more than anything, I just want to know, is my house still there? Lisa Gregory said as she sat in a lawn chair under a tree at an evacuation center. At its height, more than 34,000 homes and about 82,000 residents were under evacuation warnings. While the east side of the fire near the desert was brought partly under control, and some evacuees on that side were allowed to return home, the west side's hillsides were still showing heavy flames and thick smoke. Meanwhile, a new fire broke out in rural Santa Barbara County, quickly surging to about 500 acres and prompting the evacuation of a pair of campgrounds. Another blaze near Lake Isabella in Kern and Tulare counties in the center of the state had burned more than 2 square miles. During 5 years of drought, California's wildlands have seen a continuous streak of destructive and sometimes deadly fires. No deaths have been reported in the latest fire, but crews assessing property damage were using cadaver dogs during searches. The dry vegetation is like firewood, said Fire Information Officer Sean Collins. It burns that much quicker, that much hotter. The rate of travel is extremely fast, he said. Wildfires across the country in recent years have grown more ferocious and expensive to fight. Last year's fire season set a record with more than 15,625 square miles of land charred. It was also the costliest on record with $2.1 billion spent to fight fires from Alaska to Florida. Experts have blamed several factors, including rising temperatures that more quickly dry out forests and vegetation. Decades of aggressively knocking down small fires also have led to the buildup of flammable fuel. On top of that, more people are moving into fire-prone regions, complicating firefighting efforts. In the Southern California fire, air tankers bombarded rugged slopes with fire retardant, and a squadron of helicopters dropped load after load of water to corral flames. On the ground, firefighters and bulldozers worked to protect the ski town of Wrightwood and other areas high in the San Gabriel Mountains. The fire unleashed its initial fury on a semi-rural landscape dotted with small ranches and homes in Cajon Pass and on the edge of the Mojave Desert before climbing the mountains. Travel was returning to normal in the pass, a major corridor for trucking, rail, and commuter traffic after Interstate 15 was fully reopened. In mountains north of San Francisco, fire crews gained more ground on a wildfire as damage inspectors surveyed the area to determine how many structures were destroyed or damaged. The 6-square-mile blaze was 55% contained after destroying at least 268 structures, including 175 homes and 8 businesses in the working-class community of Lower Lake. The equipment manager or armorer of the U.S. Olympic fencing team was among those who lost their homes. Matthew Porter was in Rio with the medal-winning team when the house burned. Damon Pashilk is charged with 14 counts of arson in connection with 12 separate fires dating back to July 2015 and one count of attempted arson. The 40-year-old construction worker appeared in court Wednesday, but he did not enter a plea. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald Review, August 19th. Please stay tuned.